ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. Ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I'm not going to get no interview. I know. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shots and the ties for your makeup. Cause I'll make you ugly as soon as it drops. We're on a rampage, bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble in the dust, cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say, you
today on the show, we have Gary Parrish. I'm a little worried about this because on his show yesterday, I'm unbeknownst to me, totally unsuspecting. I cheerfully pick up the phone at 5 o'clock the way that I do, and he comes at me.
5:07.
5:07, 5:15, whatever, whenever he gets to me, he just comes at me hard, unrelentingly, over Brady White. I wrote a column saying Brady White had a good day and can we give it a rest for a week? That apparently offended GP, who is relentless in his view that Brady White is terrible. No, that's not true. The truth of the matter is, I really don't think we disagree that much on Brady White. I think we both think he's a limited quarterback, but I think he had a good game. And I think fundamentally he's an effective quarterback, but he also has his limitations. Is there anything wrong with that take? Fundamentally effective within the offense, but has his limitations.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. Unfortunately, that's...
But here's the real question. Is Brady White the reason, if Memphis doesn't, quote-unquote, do what they want to do, right, is Brady White the reason?
The reason's a stretch, but I would also point out
he's one of the reasons.
Right.
But first of all, I don't think Memphis is quote-unquote. I don't know what they want to do is, right? But they want to do is go to a New Year's
Day
bowl.
What they want to do is go undefeated and win the league, go to undefeated. Yeah.
Yeah. If that's what they want to do, is he one of the reasons that they will not do that? Yes.
Yeah, because
is the defense another reason and is the offense and is another reason?
Well,
yes.
It's unfair to say is he the reason. I would counter by saying if he were an elite quarterback.
Yes, he could carry them to it. Yes,
right.
Absolutely. Or if...
saying, was Eli Manning the reason that Ole Miss did not win the SEC West and
Eli
the SEC?
Eli Manning was closer to elite.
Right, but I'm still saying, because he was that good,
but against LSU,
he missed some throws, and they didn't beat LSU day. You see what I'm saying? But was Eli Manning the reason why they didn't? That's absurd.
I do think he has his limitations, but you know what else I think? I think the team has limitations. If you pick the best quarterback in college football, you don't know that it's Trevor Lawrence.
No, I would still say it's Tua.
Pick the best quarterback in the last 5 years. If you put Tua on this team,
yes.
Could they do what? Yes, absolutely. Right?
Right.
If you pick any other American Athletic Conference quarterback on this team, there are some that would give him a better shot, I believe. Right, but would any of them make Memphis the favorite? Do I believe any of them would make Memphis undefeated? And the likely, I think unlikely.
I think unlikely too, because I'm not as sold on De'Aaron King as the hype train is.
That people love, right? So is he? Does he have his limitations? Yes, he is. Anyway, so I'm a little bit. I got to tell you, I got some trepidation. GP came at me hard. Not since the San Antonio, our throwdown in San Antonio.
Ah, yes.
Who can forget? Did we have such a conflict?
You walked off, right?
I don't like to relive that, man. That was rough. Did I? Yeah, I walked away from the microphone. I was stomping my feet, and I walked away from the microphone. We were both hungover, and it was a bad day for both of us. I think he was wrong, and I was wrong. We then played it back for the people with a –
I found it one year.
We brought in a marriage counselor. And we replayed it with the benefit of a marriage counselor. And as in most of these things, I think both people, you know, have a share of blame.
They had their
– Everybody had their part.
There's plenty to go around.
Plenty of blame to go around for that wonderful bit of radio. Anyway, GP is in the next segment. Chris Harrington's going to join us. You know what we're going to talk to Chris Harrington about? Andre Iguodala, the malcontent. How about that? From Shams Charania. We just call him Shams.
Mm-hmm.
Shams Charania. Sources. Memphis wants 3-time champion. First of all, by the way, literally from the beginning, there are some stories or tweets or news, whatever, that you sort of say, I wonder where that came from.
This one, you don't have to wonder.
This one, you can literally from the
Leaves
very
no
beginning. Memphis wants 3-time champion Andre Iguodala. So you're like, oh, man, here he is, buttering him up to report to training camp and is refusing right now to engage in a buyout, which would prevent Iguodala from finishing a Hall of Fame career on his terms, because this may be his final NBA season.
Kay.
How about that? Where did that one come from?
That one either came from Andre himself or his agent. It's one or the other.
Yeah, there's a couple other ways to look at this.
Three-time world champion and Hall of Famer won't lower his rate.
And Hall, yeah, yes.
Didn't say anything about taking a dollar less.
He did say no, won't negotiate a buyout. Didn't he say that? Or won't release him? What does it say? Don't negotiate a buyout? I think he clearly would take, I think he would take a dollar less. Let me rephrase this if I can. Other teams refuse to deal for Andre Iguodala, preventing him from finishing his borderline Hall of Fame career on his own terms. Okay? Or how about this one? Andre Iguodala is under contract for $17 million, refuses to play for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yep, both applicable.
Like, the guy is he's
under contract.
He has a contract that he signed. It was traded to the Grizzlies. They have his rights. He owns $17 million. Grizzlies don't owe him a damn thing. Do not owe him a damn thing.
If he's upset, maybe don't go on national radio and trash the team that you're on.
He could give it all back.
Sure he could.
He could give it all back. I bet the Grizzlies would let him go then. Listen, I don't want to make too big a deal of this because it's Chris Harrington, and again, Chris Harrington's going to join us at 10 o'clock.
In studio, by the way.
In studio, that's good. As Chris Harrington points out, the Grizzlies have already won in this trade. The point was not what they will ultimately get for Andre Iguodala. They got a first-round pick in the deal already from Golden State, and because of the Dwight Howard buyout, they don't really need the money. Like, if they just did and engage in buyout negotiations and let him walk and get nothing for him, this would not be some grand defeat for the Grizzlies, right? Anything more they get from Iguodala is a bonus. And if they can deal him, that's a bonus. And so I don't think that you should look at this as Iguodala is that if the Grizzlies, quote unquote, cave, they're getting screwed here. Someone said, I hope this doesn't turn into a Chandler Parsons situation. That's what they said to me on Twitter. It can't turn into a Chandler Parsons situation. You know why? Because Chandler Parsons made $94 million, and the Grizzlies wanted him to be awesome, and instead, he both sucked, and he was a malcontent troublemaker, undercutting the entire front office while he was here.
He's an acceptable douchebag.
And he was an I don't know that he is an acceptable douchebag.
Well, he was, according to Chrisley.
Yes. I think we all can reevaluate. Just cut off the douchebag next time. Edit that, and we'll go.
He's acceptable?
No, he's a douchebag. Anyway, so no, he's whatever. But so this is not in no sense is this a debacle. It's simply, can the Grizzlies extract a little more by dealing him? And the truth of the matter is, one reason they may not be able to deal him is that Andre Iguodala may not want to be dealt to the playing teams where the Grizzlies could get value. That may be another reason that he can't finish his contract on his own terms. By the way, he is finishing his contract on his own terms. He negotiated these terms.
Yeah.
These are his terms. He said, I will sign this contract, and in the third year of this contract, even though I'm not that good anymore, I'm going to be making $18 million. Those were his terms. Those were the terms. No, you can't. They're not letting him walk for nothing. And if the Grizzlies just say, you do whatever you want, we're irrelevant in this. So anyway, it was a fairly hilarious tweet from Shams. And it was clearly a product of the Andre Iguodala camp. But then it does make it a little awkward. Like, this is what you will hear from the national media, right?
Oh, for sure.
This is not the first. Can't believe the Grizzlies are holding him hostage. Since when do hostages get paid $18 million?
God.
That's the kind of hostage I'd like to be.
I was going
to
say, can I volunteer?
Let me stay at the Westin and be paid $18 million and be that kind of a hostage.
Westin?
So
Iggy's going to be playing so much golf.
Yeah, so let me be in that kind of a hostage crisis. Anyway, Chris Harrington has a piece up at the Daily Memphian about that. We will talk to him about that. And then, of course, because it is Tuesday, Jessica Benson is going to join us. Sports reporter for ABC 24 CW30. I happened to be sitting next to Jessica yesterday at the Memphis football luncheon, where we learned, among other things, that Patrick Taylor will not play this week for the University of Memphis, and not for a few weeks or a couple weeks, or we don't really know. Will he play? They got a bye week next week. Play against Navy, maybe, right? But he clearly will not be playing this week. I was sitting next to Jessica, and we were talking about all kinds of things. But in the course of the conversation, she said that she was just bemoaning her life, wonderful life, but this particular aspect of her life. And she said that she played against Sammy Watkins in 4 of her 5. I may have the numbers wrong, but in 4 of her 5 fantasy leagues. And then she also said that she played the Browns defense in all 5 of her fantasy leagues, okay? Now, apart from the terrible misjudgment in doing that, and at least in retrospect, I'm not sure it was a bad decision on the front end, but in retrospect, it was certainly a bad decision. My son Peter betrayed everything that was dear to our family, and he played the Jets defense against the Bills. Went well, actually, because you get points for turnovers.
Especially for 3 quarters.
That's a better choice.
Turnovers and no points.
The larger question is, why in God's name is it terrible, Aaron Judge, to have 5 fantasy? To me, the key part of that sentence was all 5 fantasy leagues. Isn't that deranged?
Oh, yeah. I've told you, I'm at the point where I legitimately hate fantasy football.
Yeah, but even if you – okay, and I get that because it screws with your betting.
Yes.
Of course, you bet, so that also screws
right,
with your –
right, once I became
whatever.
An adult.
Right, you've moved on to grown-up betting. But even if you're going to play fantasy football, is there any reason to have, honestly, more than one team? But forget that, 2 teams. I think – you know what I think? I think fantasy football teams are a lot like dogs, okay? If you've got one – that's great. You can lavish all your attention on it. We all understand. It comes close to you. Everybody else doesn't want to hear about it necessarily, but you got this one fantasy team. It's like a dog, right? If you got 2, okay, it's a little bit more of a handful, a little harder to manage, et cetera, but that's fine. You can double. Once you get to 3, 4, and 5, you become a crazy dog lady.
The only argument I would make is originally out of college, I had my high school friend group from home. I had my fraternity friend group, and then I had my other friend group.
It's not to win.
Yes.
It's to keep in touch
exactly.
with different collections of people.
Because you always have a draft where even if you do it, you know, even if you're Skyping and whatnot, or you're doing, you know, video chatting, like it
is
was.
Is that an acceptable reason to do it? Is that it literally keeps you plugged in to 5 different groups of people?
I don't know if it's acceptable, but that was my reason.
That would be if you say, listen, it's a pain in the ass. I know it doesn't enhance my football enjoyment. It's crazy. It's too much
to
manage.
It actually takes away from my enjoyment.
But it's my way of staying in touch with these people. And
yes.
That, I think, is an acceptable answer. Anyway, Jessica will help. Will help us untangle this. Plus, Lynn Swann, her athletic director, resigned suddenly last night. So there you go. We'll talk to her about that at USC. GP, Chris Harrington, and Jessica Benson. Before I do anything else, I did want to discuss three things very quickly.
Okay.
Good leadership, bad leadership, and more good leadership. Okay? The good leadership, and I touched on this yesterday, but I think it really bears repeating. I have a column up on it in the Daily Memphian, is the University of Memphis is ranked for the first time ever in the U.S. News and World Report rankings. And that's a big deal. And it's a big deal because the U.S. World Report rankings matter way too much. Like, they're I don't even know. Does the U.S. World Report even exist apart from their college rankings anymore? Like, as an
as a magazine or whatever?
Magazine?
Yeah.
I don't know the damn thing exists anymore. But they do still rank schools, and it's the one that everyone pays attention to. And Memphis has, they rank a whole bunch of schools into the 160 or something, right? And then after that, they just throw, here are the rest of y'all in a big bucket. You all are tier two. They call them tier two.
Yep.
And the tier one universities are the ones that they rank individually. The University of Memphis, in its history since the U.S. World News and World Report started ranking schools, has never been ranked as an individual. It's just been in the tier two bucket. And here's the rest of them. It's not really even others receiving votes. And they are ranked, and I think it's worth noting for two reasons. One is there's clearly a sports aspect to this, and I'm not telling you that means Memphis has a clear shot into the Power Five. I am telling you that when Memphis didn't even make it to the final 11 in that charade of a Big 12 expansion derby that they had a few years ago, Memphis was, well, we're going to sponsor the bowl game, the championship game. We're going to give everybody loads of money. Fred Smith was involved, whatever else. The University of Confident they were going to get in and whatever. The only question was whether they're going to be 1, 2, 3, et cetera. They ended up saying we're going to interview 11 schools. Memphis was not even one of the 11. And nobody knows exactly what happens, the disconnect between the very confident public statements of the University of Memphis folks, including Alan Graf, and the snub, which is the only thing you can describe it as, when they did not even make the final 11. Rice made the final 11. Rice, which I don't think has won a game.
Tulane
made the final 11. Memphis did not make the final 11. One of the reasons was, it's academics. You know, it's academics. Can't lower ourselves by taking in the University of Memphis. Now, that disregards the fact that the University of Memphis is a different, it depends. Listen, all this stuff depends on what you put in as the criteria. If you put in number of first generation students as the criteria, as a positive, Memphis would rank pretty damn high, higher than Rice, I would venture to say. So it all depends on what you pick, right, as your criteria. Because Memphis is a school of opportunity. That's what it is. But they judge what they judge. And so David Rudd gets in there as the point is that this is at least taking away an impediment to, in the next round of expansion, Memphis is no longer just dismissed as a tier two university in this ranking. Now, in fairness, when people talk about tier one and tier two universities, what they often are talking about is the Carnegie rankings. And there, Memphis is not yet a tier one university, but I will tell you, they are very close, and it is the next thing they have in their sights, and I expect them to be a Carnegie one tier university pretty soon. But in terms of this, they have at least taken that off the table. I don't really think, though, this is about Power Five, and it shouldn't be. Academics aren't just important as some, what are they going to help us get in the right conference? Like, they are the reason the university exists. And so
it's just your opinion, man.
And so there is that. The second part of this that I think is significant is what it says about leadership. When David Rudd became president of the University of Memphis, listen, he didn't love the U.S. World Report rankings. No one does. Every university administrator thinks they're crazy that this much weight is placed on the U.S. World News Report rankings. And it is kind of crazy. But he says, as long as this is the world we live in, we have to get ourselves ranked. And so what he did was set about doing the things that were required. They put together a group, a task force to study it. One of the things they did, I've written about this before, but it's genius, is they said, you know what we're going to do? Because part of the ranking system is literally just provosts, deans, administrators, college presidents, they rank 1 to 5. What do you think of the University of Memphis? That's it, right? And you put in, I think it sucks, 1, or I think it's great, 5, or whatever it is. And it's totally subjective.
Yep.
So he started saying monthly mailings of what is going on at the University of Memphis to all the people who are eligible to vote in this process. A little bit like a Heisman campaign, right?
Yep.
Only more important. And what did he do?
Again, because your opinion.
If you get this garbage mail from the University of Memphis and you're university president, what do? You throw it out, right? Because who needs monthly mailings from some PR mailings? Here's the smart thing they did. It's a small thing, but it's a smart thing. It's the same kind of thing when I used to talk about John Calipari, what a genius he is at PR, because he thinks of everything. What David Rudd did was say, you know what we're going to do? Let me ask you, Jeffrey, have you ever had a FedEx envelope? I bet you throw out junk mail all the time, right?
Absolutely.
I do too. Have you ever had a FedEx envelope delivered to your house and not opened it?
Absolutely not.
No, you open a FedEx envelope.
Ooh.
Of course. I got a fist. Must be important.
Is this a check?
It's here. It's a FedEx envelope. This is important. They rushed it to me. So what he did, he reached a deal with FedEx. So these things go out not just in junk mail. They go out in FedEx envelopes to all of these folks. And guess what happened? The subjective ranking rate rose from a 2.2 to a 2.5, which is one of the reasons they are now ranked. The other reason they are ranked, and a much more significant reason that they're ranked, is they've gone from a 43% graduation rate to a 53% graduation rate. Now, that's important beyond the rankings, of course. It means that 53% of the people in that are now graduating as opposed to 43. But that's the product of 15, 16, 20 different initiatives they have targeting folks who are struggling in school. They actually, the number of people who are on academic probation / warning status has dropped 30%. And again, it's funny because people will say to me all the time, well, I wonder if he cares too much about sports, or does he meddle in sports, or how about the rest of the university? And we generally don't know. Right? We don't know. We can't. I've never been able to weigh in on David.
I'm not involved in the meetings and
on
whatnot.
David Rudd. Yeah. What kind of a president he is apart from sports. I can tell that under David Rudd, the sports programs have certainly undergone a renaissance. But what kind of a – and that there are others to who get credit for that, including Mike Norvell and Justin Fuente and Penny Hardaway and Tom Bowen and et cetera, Ren Baker, all the people over there in the athletic department. But it's hard. It's been hard to know what – it feels like there's good things happening, right? You look up and every time there's a – bridge being built or a building being built or like whatever, some celebration over something good happening. But I don't know. But now I do know, because this is absolutely concrete proof that the University of Memphis, never previously ranked, now ranked. And I will tell you, it goes back to leadership. In fact, the truth of the matter is, you know how David Rudd occasionally comes off as completely crazy?
Go on.
Well, like when he went after Lee Harris, right? When after Mayor Harris over the whatever, people like I got calls from the people in the Harris administration saying, "What is David Rudd doing?" Right?
Yes.
He goes like he actually reminds me of Penny Hardaway.
Go on.
He'll say anything. He doesn't care who he offends. He just cares about getting there, right? And in fact, sometimes I don't even know like the truth of the matter of what he says. Like the Harris administration disputed a lot of things that he said in his quote letter, right, or whatever in his statement about them. He doesn't care. And I will tell you that in the same way that when Calipari came in and transformed the basketball program, in the same way that Penny did, I just get the sense that it's not about coddling people's feelings. Like it's leadership, right?
Sure.
There you have positive leadership. Now we switch to Tennessee, and of course, since we last
Also, sorry for, again, another year where your alma mater's number two. I'm sorry.
Behind Princeton?
Yeah.
F them.
Hey, I'm now a top 50.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start sending out FedEx envelopes saying F Princeton.
Yep.
Anyway, what are you?
We moved up to 50.
You move up to 50.
I'm now a graduate of a top 50 university.
Tell people your alma mater.
That would be Pepperdine University.
Pepperdine University, which is top, which number one campus. Maybe a number one campus. Yeah, beautiful right there in the Pacific.
We have, I would say, an unfair playing field, but yes.
They have nice facilities. Yeah. Good facilities great. There.
Well, I don't know about that.
Okay, good view. Good view.
There it is.
A very good view. Top 50. He's a top 50 university. But anyway, so then you go to Tennessee, and you've got a guy who's just blundering around, and more blundering yesterday when what in God's name did he mean when he said the Titanic was sinking and there's rats and they ran to the top of the ship? I didn't even understand that. What are the rats supposed to do? Was he criticizing the rats that, first of all,
I think
obviously,
he was saying the rats are going to drown?
But all the rats drowned.
Right.
What rats survived? Well, what were you supposed to do as a rat? Oh, you're a rat on the Titanic, okay? First of all,
can rats swim?
The Titanic, yes, they can swim, but.
Okay, I've only seen Ratatouille.
But not.
He kind of could swim.
They can't swim from there to the shore.
Okay.
They could have, like, grabbed a piece of wood with.
Right. All I was going to say is.
What's her name? What was the actress?
Rose. So the actress was Kate Winslet. But yes. While Jack,
I bet Kate would have said, "Come on aboard, rat."
Right. While there wasn't enough room for Jack, apparently there would have been enough room from Rat for Emmy.
So, but I don't understand these rats that are running up to the top of the. That's what they're supposed to do if a rat, aren't you? Now they didn't save you for long because you know what happened? The rats that jumped off drowned, and then the rats that stayed on also drowned.
Indeed,
seems like a bad metaphor.
It seemed well. What was the bigger upset? The fact that Jeremy Pruitt had seen Titanic? Or the fact that he was using it as a
football coach uses.
Right.
From the fact that it's a weepy, whatever, romance film, right?
Like, yes.
Aren't you supposed to be using Remember the Titans or something? Like, what are you supposed to be doing? Or
I think the problem is they won in Remember the Titans.
Okay, what should he have said?
What should he have said?
Cassidy and Sundance Kid, you want that? Going out guns blazing?
I would have liked to have started with something that wasn't a catastrophe.
You wouldn't have gone Hindenburg.
I probably would not have gone Hindenburg.
You wouldn't have gone Titanic.
Yes. Lusitania probably
wouldn't have gone
there.
Poseidon Adventure.
Exactly.
Just like the I'm rattling off films from the 70s.
Who could forget?
So here's the thing. Your colleague, Mark Giannato, says they should fire him today, basically,
sure.
Right? Cut bait. We've learned from the Penny Hardaway situation that you've got to cut bait. A GP says you should offer $10 million to a coach, okay, to come in and take the money and just take the money. This is the way out. Which of those things do you endorse? Do you endorse firing him now? And Mark's point was this is just like the Hardaway situation in Memphis, where once you know someone's bad, you don't hang around and give them another year.
If I had confidence that this administration could go and make a hire, I would say cut bait, because I do not have the confidence that they can go and get someone. Because
that's the key difference with the Hardaway situation.
Yes.
When you fired Tubby,
there was him right. He was waiting right there.
He was right there with the number one recruiting. Now, there were risks.
Also,
anyone who
important
says there
to note,
risks,
he was willing to take less than market value.
Yes. You had the best person for the job who could theoretically bring in a number one recruiting class and take less than market value and could do it right away and would fill the stands instantly. That does not exist for Tennessee. I think the better comparison is the Larry Porter era.
Okay.
Larry Porter era, there was no easy answer. It looked hopeless, completely inept, in over his head, et cetera. In over his head in a way, honestly, that Jeremy Pruitt is not. As bad as Jeremy Pruitt is, not as bad as Larry Porter was. But there was no obvious, like, got to go get this guy. You know what they did? They just made a smart hire. They went out and hired Justin Fuente, who no one at the time that they hired him, I had never heard of Justin Fuente. He was co-offensive coordinator at TCU.
Yes.
And people knew, I guess, that he was good, but he was not on everybody's, boy, you got to go get Justin Fuente. I think it's much more like that situation than it is the Penny Hardaway situation. GP says you can back up the truck and get someone to accept $40 million. Can you back up the truck and get someone to accept $40 million? Not $40 million, $8 million a year, $10 million a year, $10 million a
year. All right, here was the list that I was working with under that supposition. I think I'm not sold on him, but I think you could, at that price, I think David Shaw would be more interested at getting out of Stanford now, especially that it looks like there's...
And he's a Tennessee kind of coach.
Sure.
Right.
He definitely believes in run pass balance.
Could he recruit Tennessee?
I think he could. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day,
how about Matt Campbell?
They tried to go after him last time. It didn't work. Now,
did they try to go after him with $10 million?
That was literally my follow-up to that. I think you'd have to make the... But all indications are Matt Campbell is waiting for one of the big Midwest jobs. And Midwest or Rust Belt jobs. And I think Matt Campbell is keeping an eye on James Franklin. And I think originally he was thinking...
There could be some whatever happens with whether... What's going to pop, though? Where is Franklin going to go?
Well, the thought was originally USC, but they're sitting here at 2-0. And if you've been watching USC this year... Clay Helton's got a really good chance to keep his job.
Yes, because he has someone else calling the shots.
Exactly. And it's the
Ed Orgeron.
My number one assistant on the list would be I'd go get Graham Harrell. And Graham Harrell fits your Justin Fuente category. Because when I watch Graham Harrell, they look remarkably competent on offense. And then more importantly, I've watched...
And he doesn't come... He brings a lot of the leech without a lot of the craziness of leech, right?
He's a leech that you can make the face of your program.
Right, exactly.
If you keep going after that, you can maybe Kyle Whittingham if you threw $10 million at him. But the problem is Kyle Whittingham's he's where he's from. I mean, that's kind of the other problem. This is another big issue.
How about Urban? You told me before show begins.
But I think that's an institutional decision.
If you put $10 million in front of Urban Meyer, he would take the job.
Yes, but I do think that is an institutional decision that I'm not sure Tennessee would make. I think when you decide...
You really believe if you put a seven-year, $70 million contract in front of Urban Meyer, he would take it?
Yeah. He'd have to have several...
And he could have carte blanche to do whatever the hell he wanted.
Yeah, if all his demands were met, yeah, I think he'd take it.
Why?
Doesn't
he mostly just want to win at a high level and win a national championship? Or he's convinced he can win anywhere because he can recruit anywhere.
Yeah, I think he's convinced as long as the job is in a certain tier, he can win anywhere. And I think for sure, I mean, you look at what his biggest competition would be. Dan Mullen, who's one of his assistants, and Kirby Smart, who I would imagine when Urban Meyer watches his teams play, Urban is not impressed with how he coaches.
Kirby Smart. Interesting. All right, we got to take a break. GP is going to join me next. We're going to try to avoid...
He also mentioned the Tennessee job being an elite job.
He called it a top 10 job. Yep. He did. Yes, he did. GP next. Jeff Calkins, Show 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Get more 92.9. Download the radio.com app now and make sure your favorite 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis.
Tunica's next big winner is here. Welcome to Gold Strike's Moneyline Book Bar and Grill. It's your best bet for watching all the football action. Place your bets on all the day's big games. You'll never miss a score with over 50 HD TVs, bringing every play to you live. Eat and drink like a champ. All your favorite sports bites and beers are on the menu. And when you're ready to play, test your skills in the Mid-South's first Top Golf Swing Suite. It's more fun than you can tackle. Only at Gold Strike Casino Resort. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Regions wants to know, what's a financial tip you'd give your younger self?
You're never too old to get the band back together.
Regions has the tools and tech to manage your money according to your priorities. Enjoy digital tools, innovative ATMs, and customizable security features, all with the kind of financial clarity your younger self could only dream of.
Negotiate your salary. You're worth every penny.
Because some things are bigger than banking. Switch for good at regions.com/biggerthanbanking. Regions, member FDIC.
This is Gary Parrish. The Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar is a great place right next to the University of Memphis campus on the Highland Strip. And if you have an event, a birthday party, a wedding party, a graduation party, any kind of party, book some space at the Bluff. You can rent out any part of the Bluff, the front to the back to the mezzanine, and the place is big enough to accommodate 600 people. They can cater the event for you, or you can provide your own catering. Terrific rates, and you can trust that someone on staff is going to be on site to make sure your event is perfect. TheBluffMemphis.com and click the Host Your Event tab to get it booked today. TheBluffMemphis.com.
Hi, folks. Good news for bargain hunters and bandits from the Chevy Sheriff in Collierville. Sunrise Chevy has over 500 Chevys and used cars in stock just in time for the Sunrise Low Price Rodeo. Factory rebates up to $5,000. Sunrise discounts high as $8,000. And don't forget, Sunrise specializes in secondary financing. Need a good body shop? Bring it to Sunrise. We work on all makes and models. Remember, you can bring your Chevy to Sunrise for service no matter where you bought. Buy American and buy from Sunrise. There's always a sale at the Sunrise Chevy Ranch. Find new roads to 385 in Houston Levy and Collierville. Chevy's cost less at Sunrise, partner.
The internet. You need it. Almost every minute of the day. Because, hey, you've got shows to stream, emails to reply all to, and LOLs to, LOL. That's why you need Xfinity. You can get the fastest, most reliable internet with gig speeds available. So you can get online and get down to business faster. And Xfinity delivers enhanced network security so all your connected devices are protected. Get instant alerts when strangers are trying to hop on your network. Set curfews with parental controls and pause your Wi-Fi at dinner time. That's life with Xfinity, the best internet provider in America, according to speedtest.net. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. Get started with Xfinity Internet for $20 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement. Plus, add xFi Advantage for enhanced network security, safer browsing, and more. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store today. Requires equal bill and autopay. Ends 9/24/19. Restrictions apply. New performance starter 25 megabits per second internet customers only. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply. Actual speeds vary.
Attention. If you're in debt to the IRS and frustrated with your options, for a limited time, you can call and quickly check your eligibility for the Fresh Start programs offered by the IRS to reduce or even eliminate your tax problem. Through this special toll-free hotline number, you can find out in minutes if you qualify for these powerful new debt reduction programs greenlighted by the IRS for 2019. If you have unfiled tax returns, under audit, have a wage or bank levy, or just want to know your options, business or personal, Republic Tax Relief's A-plus rated tax relief system has helped thousands stop IRS collections immediately and saved millions in tax debt. These relief programs will not last forever. Call the hotline number now. 800-501-7110. That's 800-501-7110. Check your eligibility for tax debt savings today. Call 800-501-7110. That's 800-501-7110.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Gary Parrish. Gary Parrish is the host of the Gary Parrish Show from 4 to 6. He'll have me on today, sometime between 5 and 5:20 or whenever the hell he gets to me. He is the National College Basketball Columnist for CBSSports.com, multiple Emmy-winning personality, rising star in the field of meteorology, and Brady White's chief detractor. He joins me now. GP, how are you?
I'm great. Are you okay?
I'm good. Let's see if we can come to terms. Let's see if we can come to an agreement on Brady White before we do anything else, okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Let's you lay it out, and I'll tell you if I agree or disagree.
Okay. I think Brady White is a good quarterback who runs the offense well and is not good enough to carry the team to transcend any of the other flaws in the team and carry the team to a New Year's Day bowl. He's, in fact, just about as good as a team, which is a pretty good team, and is not the fatal
flaw
Greg
McElroy
on this team. I think he's a good quarterback who's just about as good as the team is.
Okay, I agree with some of that. Don't agree with all of it. I think given that oddsmakers have said Memphis is good enough to win every game on its schedule, it suggests Memphis in general is good enough to go undefeated and win a conference championship. Well, my contention is that if they do not reach those expectations, the reason will be because they did not have a difference maker at quarterback. And it didn't matter as much last season because they had difference makers at running back. And though I still think they're strong at that position when healthy, it's clearly not the same as being able to dump the ball off to Daryl Henderson.
I agree with everything you just said. But except for this, here's what I agree is that no, he is not an elite quarterback. I will agree with you. He is not an elite quarterback. He is not capable of carrying this team to an undefeated season. He's not I don't believe that he's capable. But here's, you know what else? I believe he's as good a quarterback as the offensive line is an offensive line. I believe he's probably better, honestly. Historically, he's certainly a better quarterback than the defense is a defense. We've seen good things from the defense so far, but, like, he was much better last year than the defense was last year, whatever his limitations were, much better. Defense was just garbage last year. Do they have an elite running back? I think Kenny Gainwell's very good, shows promise. I don't think he is significantly better or worse than any of the rest of the team, honestly. Like, I think he's good, and I think they're good. But I don't think – yes, if he were Andrew Luck, he might be able to carry a very good team, a good AAC team to an undefeated season and whatever else. And I think if Kenny Gainwell were Herschel Walker, that's also true. And I think if the defense were the Steel Curtain, that's also true. But I don't think any of those things are true.
I guess when I heard you guys talking about it in the opening segment, like if Tua Tagovailoa was quarterbacking Memphis right now, would they go undefeated? And I think we can all agree, yeah, probably. You know, same thing with Andrew Luck. I guess
they'd have a much better chance. And he's not that. Right. I've never argued with that. I just don't think he's much better or worse than the rest of the team.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for all Memphis fans, but speaking from my own perspective, I don't need him to be Andrew Luck or Tua Tagovailoa. Like, I think Riley Ferguson could lead this team to at that quarterback position, could lead the rest of this roster to an undefeated season. I would feel much more comfortable.
The weird thing is he didn't, though. Like, he didn't. Like, we've seen Riley Ferguson. And honestly, the rest of the offense is worse than the offense was around Riley Ferguson. Why could Riley Ferguson lead this team to an undefeated season if he couldn't leave that team to an undefeated season?
Because
he didn't lead that team. He didn't. Did he? What? It's go ahead. Yeah.
In the preseason, people predicted this team to win its division and also win the league. And therefore, trust the football experts.
No, I'm trusting me. Like, I didn't. Did you pick them to do that? I didn't pick them to do that. Like, I thought that was insane. They said they could win every game. Anyone who picked this team to go undefeated, if that's the standard that really this team should go undefeated, if he's not, I think that's just stupid. They're good. They're not that good. And so I guess on this one, honestly, any of those football experts you rattle, I suspect I've seen more Memphis games than any of them. I don't think this team's a good team. And he can't – I don't believe he can carry him to an undefeated season. And I think there will be games where you're, oh, man, he's not good enough to carry this team to an undefeated season. I agree with that. But I don't think the running back's good enough to carry him to an undefeated season. I don't think the offensive line is good enough to carry him to an undefeated season. And I don't think the defense, although it's better, is good enough to carry him to an undefeated season. I think he's just about as good as the whole rest of the team.
My larger point would be this. There are times with either of the previous two quarterbacks in this excellent, historic five-year run of Memphis football where you would go, oh, boy, I don't know if they could have won that game without Paxton Lynch. Or, oh, man, I don't know if they would have won that game without Riley Ferguson. I don't think we've ever said, I don't think Memphis would have won that game without Brady White. And I'm skeptical that we'll ever say that. It's not just that we will say, he's not good enough to carry them. It's that we might not ever say, boy, he if not for him, that game would not have been a W. And honestly, like, this is nothing new. It's nothing like I didn't say anything yesterday that I hadn't said the week prior or the week before that or last season. I guess the reason I brought it up yesterday is simply because, and I say this as respectfully as I can say it, I thought it was odd to read a column saying, oh, so you guys still think Brady White can't throw after a win over a SWAC team that any high major quarterback is supposed to be able to make throws against.
I would say this. If your point is, the truth of the matter is, I really don't think we're that far apart. I don't think he's an elite quarterback. You don't think he's an elite quarterback. I don't think he's as good as Paxton Lynch. You don't think he's as good as Paxton Lynch. I think he's one of the best five quarterbacks in Memphis history.
You know, so no, he's not one of the, he's not Paxton. Riley would throw more bad picks and stuff, so you could argue that one. I think marginally I'd take Riley over Brady. So I don't think he's elite. You don't think he's elite. I just think he gets pounded a lot, because I think the fact that he might be singled out as the reason they do this is silly. Because the reason they don't do this, because I've never thought they were going to do it, and I don't think they would do it with either of the other two. And I'm not saying he has a howitzer. I'm saying, given time, he's capable of moving the team. That's all I said. That's what I said. And I think that's true. But I don't think he's capable of going undefeated, but neither do I think would Riley Ferguson go undefeated. Indeed, I've seen Riley Ferguson with better weapons around him. There's no Anthony Miller on this team, not even close to an Anthony Miller on this team. There's not Daryl Henderson on this team, and there's not Tony Pollard on this team. And so can he carry a team without Tony Pollard, without Daryl Henderson, without Anthony Miller, which those guys had on their team, to an undefeated season when those guys couldn't? No, I don't believe he can. And he will be, absolutely. I never said he's an elite quarterback. I don't think he is an elite quarterback. I just think he had a good game. He can throw the ball downfield given time, and maybe we should not pound him this week. That's all I said.
How dare you not show proper respect to Bernard Odin?
Right, exactly.
When you're rattling off top five quarterbacks.
Well, that's
Memphis
my point.
History.
Like, how quickly do we forget this team has always had complete garbage as quarterback? Like, and now people think that everyone should be Paxton Lynch. He ain't. He's not Paxton Lynch. I totally grant you that. He is not. Like, Paxton Lynch, like that Ole Miss game, Brady could not do what Paxton Lynch did in that Ole Miss game. And I do not dispute that. Indeed, I said it after the Auburn game. Here we see, if you take away Tony Pollard and Daryl Henderson from Brady White, he can't do it by himself. I agree with that.
I guess, we're just going in circles a little bit here. I recognize that. How quickly people forget is, like, the Cubs want to fire their manager right now. You know, like they couldn't win anything for.
The Red Sox did just fire their GM. That strikes me as insane. They won last year, and now they fired Dombrowski. Come on, man.
I've got friends who are Cubs fans who now hate Joe Madden. They hate him.
That's
they're probably about to make the playoffs. We're talking about the Chicago Cubs who couldn't win anything forever. He wins the World Series. They're probably about to make the playoffs again. They can't stand the guy. He's a lame duck manager and might not be back in Chicago. So we forget historical perspective in all sports very, very quickly. And for Memphis fans, yes, if you went back to 19, or forget that, just like 2010, and said, hey, Memphis is 2-0 with a win over Ole Miss. Quarterback might not be able to beat you downfield too often, but my God, they've been averaging 40 points per game for however many years in a row, and they're projected to win their next game and win every game on their schedule. You'd be like, woo-hoo, that sounds amazing. But what happens is Memphis fans have, at least, you know, for the past two quarterbacks, watched guys who could make plays that this guy doesn't seem capable of consistently making. And it's totally unfair
I agree with all of that. And I also agree. I think we both believe he's a B to B plus quarterback.
You think he's a
C quarterback?
I don't. Yeah. I mean,
that's the difference. Do you think he's a deficient quarterback? He's a real problem.
I don't think he's a real problem.
I think he's about as good as a team. I think it's a B to B plus team, and he's a B to B plus quarterback.
I don't think he's a real problem. I just think that, again, and I recognize it's crazy.
We're kind of splitting hairs here. Both of us are acknowledging he can't make plays on his own, like, and win games on his own. I'm acknowledging that. You think that's the expectation, so he's a disappointment. I think it's not.
To sit here and say he's not Paxton Lynch is, like, colossally unfair. That's to say he's not a first-round NFL draft pick.
Right, he's not.
Like, obviously, most quarterbacks aren't. Like, how many are? Four, five in the country right now at best? So, like, that's a ridiculous standard. When Memphis fans or myself, you know, question Brady White as a quarterback, I don't think he's not Paxton Lynch. It's that he's not Riley Ferguson either. And more than that, forget those guys, he doesn't seem like the type of quarterback when it's first and 10 at your own 27, 2:42 to play, and you got to get to the other end zone to extend the winning streak. Do you trust that guy is going to be able to do it? I'm skeptical. I hope I'm wrong,
I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical too, although I did see him do it against Wake. They missed the field goal, but that's exactly what he did against Wake in the bowl game. He drove them down the field, and they missed the field. Listen, I'm guaranteeing this is what's going to happen. There is going to come a game where he has a bad game, and they're going to lose, right? And right. I'm sure that will happen. And you will, like, see, Jeff was wrong. And I'm building that in. I agree. That's going to happen. Like, that is going to happen. There's also going to be games when the offensive line has a bad game and they're going to lose. And they're going to be lames when the defensive back has a bad game when they're going to lose. And so I don't separate it much from the rest of the team. I want to move on. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
No, I was just going to say, some of it's built into the position as well, right? Like,
right.
There's a whole lot of reasons why the Cleveland Browns lost on Sunday. But Baker not being good is along with the penalties. Right.
The offensive line was maybe Cleveland's biggest problem. Cleveland has a crappy offensive line, and I knew that as soon as they signed. They traded for a Bills reserve offensive lineman. When you're bolstering your offensive line with former Buffalo Bills, you've got a problem. Andre Iguodala, should the Grizzlies play now? Sean Devaney says there's five or six teams. I just tweeted it out, retweeted it, or five or six teams that are interested in Andre Iguodala. They think the Grizzlies will blink. Should the Grizzlies blink?
No, not at all. Like, you owe Andre Iguodala literally nothing other than what is, required in his contract, and so they have to pay him. But they don't have to release him. They don't have to, make a good gesture because he's a, three-time world champion, former finals MVP. If Andre Iguodala wants to be angry with somebody, be angry with the team that moved you to an undesirable place relative to where you're at in your career. If you try to rank who did Andre Iguodala wrong to the extent that he's been done wrong, a guy who's about to make $18 million for playing like 17 minutes a game, it starts with the Golden State Warriors. And I'm not even saying they did him wrong. This is big boy basketball. This is big business. Everybody understands. I mean, the Clippers did a max deal with Blake Griffin, told him that he was the face of everything, and then moved him to Detroit. So, like, these kinds of things happen. And so if Andre Iguodala doesn't want to be in Memphis, it looks like he's got two options. One is, actually be willing to negotiate a real buyout that lowers the cost, significantly, or get your agent to convince somebody to make a deal for you. Short of that, if I'm the Grizzlies, I you're under contract with us. If you don't want to be here, have your agent call us and tell us what you're willing to do to not be here. But the idea that we're going to do you a favor, absolutely not. We're not in the favor business anymore.
Do you mind the fact that Memphis is going to take a PR pounding, which you've already seen with the Shams tweet, which was generally, three-time champion, great guy, humanitarian, whatever, is being screwed over by the Memphis Grizzlies. News at a, like, that's basically how it was phrased, and that's going to be the common theme from the national commentators.
Yeah, I only mind the public relations beating if it's rooted in real stuff, right? Like when the Grizzlies took a public relations beating for marching Chris Wallace and J.B. Bickerstaff out there at the exit interviews and then firing them hours later, that was a deserved public relations beating. They mishandled that.
Yep.
They did not mishandle. They're not mishandling this. Let's say it's Nick Wright or Skip Bayless or anybody who talks on TV going in on the Grizzlies about the way they're handling the Andre Iguodala situation. If I would then be able to immediately sit down with them, I'd say, you tell me, what do you think the Grizzlies should do and tell me why? And the only answer they can come up with there is that, well, Andre Iguodala doesn't want to be in Memphis. Okay, why does that concern me? That got nothing to do with me. Give me a better reason why. Well, this is maybe the last year of his career, and he wants to try to play for a contender. Cool. Tell me why that should matter to me. Like, you can go down the list every reason you think the Grizzlies should release Andre Iguodala, just let him be free, and you'll never get to a reason that benefits the Grizzlies, unless the buyout is significantly lowered or, somebody comes in and is willing to to give you assets in exchange for that contract. And so if you can't give me a good reason why the Grizzlies should just let Andre Iguodala go, free Iggy, well, then you don't have a good reason. So we're just having a stupid conversation.
Are you bursting with pride that your university is now nationally ranked by the U.S. News and World Report for the first time ever? Your proud alma mater?
I didn't fly the flag outside of my house last night. But
that's too bad.
You know,
how many people in your neighborhood fly flags outside of their house? Sports flags. To any?
I don't know that they're allowed on my street.
I don't, oh, come on.
I really don't know that
you
they
couldn't
are.
You got to put a Mets flag up. See what happens.
I tell you what you don't want to put in your yard on my street, a elect Barack Obama sign. We had about seven of those things stolen right out of my yard. you put a Hillary sign in your yard, see what happens down here on my street. Boy, they don't like those at all. I could certainly get away with a Mets flag way easier than I could an Obama sign. I have a Mets flag in the backyard, also a Grizzlies flag in the backyard. But we do not have anything in the front yard, and I do not – I would imagine if I were going – if I said everybody put your school of choice up on my street, you'd get Ole Miss, more Ole Miss than anything else, maybe not much Memphis. But sure, like, I didn't sit down with my kids last night and say, hey, boys, you're not going to believe what happened for your dad's alma mater. Like, it wasn't something we talked about. But I could be proud for and proud of – both Dr. Rudd and the university in general, because I know that stuff does matter. We can argue whether it should, but we know that it does. And so, you know, anytime that an institution of higher learning gets recognized for being better than it's ever been, at least in theory, that's obviously a good thing.
Well, and I mean, listen, it's hard for us to know how we can have an impression about what David Rudd is, good and bad or whatever, in the realm of sports. It's hard for either of us to know, you know, what he's doing with the psychology department or what he's doing with the university generally. And obviously that's the more important part of the job, although he would say it's all part of the job. It's all, and these things fit together. But I guess it's good to get affirmation that folks who seem to pay attention to these things think that he's doing a good job on that part of it, which is, after all, the job.
Absolutely, and of course it matters to him. He's a university president, but I do think as much as he is attentive to the sports aspect of his university, sometimes people could inaccurately conclude that he cares more about sports than anything else. It's just the thing that we care more about than anything else, so we notice it more often. But I can tell you basically every conversation I've had with him, you know, the academic side of the university is something that he references and things that he's trying to do or is going to do and things that he's very, very proud of. And then I'll listen and say, oh, that sounds great, but what are you going to do about this Tubby Smith thing? You know, like it eventually gets back to the things that I think most Memphians who are sports fans care about most. But I have always noticed that he is just as enthusiastic talking about things happening on that campus that have nothing to do with sports as he is, you know, a new Jumbotron at the Liberty Bowl or, you know, musical acts for Memphis Madness. He cares about every aspect of it. I think he would agree with that. And when you get something like this, the very public national acknowledgement of that, it's I'm sure it's a thing that made him super proud.
Last question. I've kept it too long, but do you have any objection to Memphis Madness tickets going first to season ticket holders? You can make an argument that this is the one Democratic don't have to pay, first come, first serve. It had been that for a long time. Now you get first shot if you're a season ticket holder. Does that bother you, or does that strike you as appropriate?
It's appropriate. I mean, it's the way the world works. And honestly, you know, if you're going to be somebody who sits in that lower level for regular season games, you're not only buying those tickets, you're making a not insignificant donation to the athletic department. And the idea that you might then be reduced to going to the upper level because you weren't quick enough on GoTigersGo.com on a Monday morning – seems crazy to me. Like, take care of your best customers. And perhaps they're not the most passionate. Maybe they're just the ones with the most money. But either way, in a bottom-line business, your best customers should be valued more than anybody else. And so I don't agree with the way they're doing everything with Memphis Madness. I think it's lunacy not to, as soon as you know.
It's insane. It's crazy. Go ahead.
As soon as you know who your musical acts are, it's confirmed, the paperwork signed, you should announce that and be done with it. Like,